I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, they lose 1-0 in overtime to St. Louis, their second overtime loss in a row. It's also their first shutout of the season. Where has all the scoring gone? And how concerned should they be? What'd you think of the alternative jerseys? I couldn't read the numbers, but you can buy these things for about $166 each. And how good was Andre Vasilevsky? He was tremendous, a big save on Braden Schenn. Meanwhile, baseball is proposing a lot of changes. Which ones do you like? Which ones do you hate? How about moving the distance of the mound back from home plate? And one day after Matt Bryan announced that he's been released by the Falcons, that's right, the Bucks have their kicker. And congratulations to USF. They went on a 3-point shot with about 6 seconds left at SMU. We got all that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, it's a new year, and if you've got a new business or maybe you just like to advertise on this podcast, we'd love to have you as a sponsor. Our sponsors are showing great response from being part of this podcast, and it is growing, of course, every day. So if you'd like to be part of our team, just contact us at SportsDayTB on Twitter or at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. We'd certainly love to have you. All right, Steve, so you were there. Tough loss by the Tampa Bay Lightning, 1-0 in overtime to the Blues, and this was an interesting game, a very competitive game. I thought the Lightning played pretty well for the most part. They simply didn't shoot the puck enough, in my opinion, and Andre Vasilevsky was just phenomenal. We'll talk about the big save he had on Braden Schenn here in just a minute. But on the macro scale, should we be concerned at all that all of a sudden this Lightning team, which is known for its explosive offense, is having trouble scoring?
I don't know if we should be concerned yet. I think it's – look, scoring goes into droughts. I mean, it happens to every good shooter in hockey. It happens to in basketball. Sometimes you just go into a drought. I think the positives out of this is that defensively the team is playing very well right now.
Yeah.
St. Louis did have 39 shots tonight, but take out the first period, they had very few scoring chances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're getting a lot of shots necessarily, but they're not grade A shots that have great percentage of going in. That the Lightning, you know, we've talked about defensively sometimes they struggle really since the break, since they've come out of the All-Star break / bye week. They've played really well defensively. They're skating hard, they're back checking, the forecheck is good. That part's good. Offensively, I think they're trying to make the perfect play.
No doubt.
Dave Mischkin mentioned today they're trying to turn B chances into A chances instead of taking the B shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're highly skilled and they're capable of it. But there is another team on the ice who's got their sticks and everything else. And look, they know that that's what the Lightning like to do. They play passing lanes against the Lightning. And I think they do need to shoot more. But I'm not worried about this team. There's enough good shooters on this team. If anything, if I'm worried about scoring on this team, is the third and fourth lines have dried up.
Yeah.
They haven't been scoring for quite some time now. The top two lines have done fine. But your fourth line and third line, you're not getting the same offensive production that you did early in the year from. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, but Pittsburgh comes to town Saturday, then you're in Florida on Sunday. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, John Cooper start changing up some of the lines a little bit. Just to try to give it a spark, just to try to change things up and get players shooting more. Now, you know, what those line combinations will be, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, you've seen, I mean, for a good part of the year, you've seen now Stamkos with Kucherov. And I was surprised
they didn't go back to that line tonight in the third period, trying to just generate something. I was surprised they didn't.
Exactly. And I mean, I think, look, they're all guilty of this. They're such great playmakers, especially Kuch. Cooch turned down some shots tonight, though, that I didn't even think he would turn down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some odd man breaks and things like that. But it just seems like you're right. They're looking for the perfect shot. The depth of their team, the depth of the scoring has been the strength of their team, where teams can't match up with those third and fourth lines, and that has completely dried up. And then I read this, and I don't know if this is true, if I read it exactly right, but it sounded to me like, you know, the Lightning are aware of what their deficiencies were, mm-hmm. and that they're really putting a lot of emphasis on defense right now, that they, you know, they're not going to allow a ton of goals. They know that when they get to the postseason, there's going to be tight games, and they're really trying to hone in on that. And I wonder if that's not that, you know, we're sort of seeing the pendulum swing a little bit, combination of just what naturally happens during the year where we hit a bit of a drought, and you know, they really are trying to be very careful and not expose Vasilevskiy, although he still remains the biggest reason why they're in some of these games. I mean, they easily – I mean, the performance he had on Thursday night was as good as I've seen him play. I mean, I don't know that there's a goaltender that can play any better than that.
Yeah, that save he had on Braden Schenn, if you haven't seen it. So he stops a couple shots on his left side, and then another shot went off the post and ricocheted out in front on Vasilevskiy's right side, right to Schenn. And Vasilevskiy just comes diving forward and stops it with his mask as he's forward with his head. You know, I'd say the best save of the year, but to be honest, take your pick out of at least six or seven I can think of.
But if I'm not mistaken, like, he's lost his stick at this point, which mm-hmm. he's done a couple times before.
Yep.
And then diving across, you know, the face of the goal in the crease there, and like you said, just gives up his body, in this case his face, anything that he can get a piece of the puck with. And the respect that other teams must have for him must be incredible, because you could see the frustration on Schenn's face, like, what do you have to do to beat this guy? And, you know, and in a seven-game series, folks, if he can stay healthy and play remotely close to the level he's at right now, and we've mentioned how, you know, in the long term, those games he missed may help him as he gets into the postseason. He might be a little bit more fresh. I just don't see many teams beating them in a seven-game series, because I don't think they're obviously going to be shut out very much, although we saw that late in the Washington series a year ago. But they've kind of hit a spell here where the puck's not going in. But not only is it not going in, and you talked about this before the puck, they're not getting and giving themselves enough scoring chances. They're turning them down.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wonder what that 10-day break did for some of the players. You know, Kucherov hasn't looked the same, you know, since coming out of the break, and 10 days off. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, one thing about hockey and basketball is kind of similar, and baseball as well, is you get in a rhythm, you get in a flow, you get in a routine. And to have 10 days off, I mean, that can really affect some timing in that. You know, so you wonder how that is. But overall, I mean, if you look at the team, and a couple things, is we said, defensively, they're improving. They're getting better. The penalty kill is phenomenal. They had the one penalty kill tonight. That may have been their best one of the season. And they've had some really good penalty kills. But they spent most of the time in the blue zone on that power play. But they're playing really well defensively. They're improving in the areas you want to see them improve on. Maybe they're not shooting enough right now. But the other part of this, and people forget, is, look, the Lightning are the top team in hockey. And they've pretty much been all year long. Everyone, it's pretty much consensus they're the best team in hockey as far as the regular season's going. Is that every team comes out giving it their best. They're taking on the big dogs, and you know, you're getting an A effort from that opposite team every night you're out there. And, mm-hmm. you know, give some credit to the other teams, too. That, you know, this is their measuring stick. This is, you know, how good are we? Where right. do we stand? I mean, you know, anytime, you know, whether it's in basketball and you're taking on the Warriors, your mm-hmm. fans, your team, you're excited to do that. They're the big dog. They're the ones that everyone's gunning for. So, you know, worried? I'm not worried. They got enough talent on this roster. You know, if they weren't skating, if they were, you know, making tons of mental errors. I mean, you know, they had a couple in the Vegas game that hurt them. The Ekin goal for one, but then I'd be worried. But they're actually playing pretty well. They're in a scoring drought right now. That happens to teams. And quite frankly, I'd rather have it happen in February than Game 6 and 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Oh boy, isn't that true? Since the break, the Lightning have played 4 games. They've had one goal.
They've had 5 games actually since the break.
5 games now?
Yeah, the Pittsburgh game as well.
All right. And then so they've had, I guess, 4 of them have been one-goal games. One mm-hmm. was decided by 2. And three of those five have gone into overtime. Two of those needed a shootout in overtime.
Yep.
And they've now lost, you know, both their home games coming off the road last week. So, and I think you talked about this before we came on, that it's only the second time this year that they've had back-to-back losses. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, only so, and this time, and these two losses were both in overtime, or shootout and overtime.
Both in, or a shootout and in overtime, right. John Cooper, after the game, kind of put it in perspective. He said, look,
you score a bunch of goals and you give up a bunch of goals, and now we're not scoring, but we're not giving anything up. So at some point, we got to find a happy medium. You know, you're not going to score at the rate we've been scoring, you know, all year. And sometimes you have to go through some of these trying times to see ultimately what doesn't work. But in saying that, like I said, that was a really – we've played a couple 0-0 hockey games here in the last week that have been just outstanding.
So that's sort of how he looks at, you know, them doing the right things on defense, playing the way you need to play. They're just not – right now they're just not finding the, you know, the back of the net. Ryan McDonald made a good point too in that – you know, this time of year, in addition to you're getting your best shot because you're the top dogs, but teams are fighting for any point they can get. You mm-hmm. know, it is now playoff time. And so everybody's going out there scrapping, even if they can get 1 point, right?
Look, St. Louis, the team they play tonight, is 1 point out of the playoffs in the Western Conference.
They need every single point. That's right.
Every point matters.
Mm-hmm. And so if they can drag you into a tie, they get a point. You know, and that's what they're trying to do, and so you're gonna see tighter games. I think, Steve, isn't that fair to say down the stretch, than you would have seen, say, in the beginning in October or something.
Oh, absolutely, because every point matters. It doesn't matter whether it's October or March, but in March now you're okay. The other team that we're chasing got a point tonight or 2 points, or oh, they lost. We have an opening. I mean, yeah, every point now. I mean, this is. You know, you look at in the Western Conference particularly where it's wide open, almost every team's still alive in the Western Conference. Every point matters. So, yeah, you're getting their A effort every game. I mean, and St. Louis has really been playing well of late. They struggled a little bit at the end of the year.
Fourth win in a row.
But, you know, they finally have figured out Berube's system, the new coach, and they're playing a lot better. So, I mean, that's a good team they played tonight. The record isn't necessarily – I think they're a better team than the record shows based on how they're playing right now. Like I said, I don't worry about the Lightning because, you know, the other part of this is, look, the Lightning are an experienced veteran team. They're skating well. They're playing hard. They know what it takes to get there. I mean, let's face it. They're waiting for April. We all are.
Oh, they're going to make it. Yeah. Right. I mean, there's no doubt, really, that it would take a titanic collapse for them not to get there.
But. This is about fine-tuning their game, and they're doing all the little things very well. They're just mm-hmm. not shooting the puck enough. And right now, even when they shoot the puck, it's just not going in. And they're in a drought. But that happens. But they're in a drought, and okay, so they're losing in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting blown out. They're not, you know, losing 3-0 or 3-1.
Right.
You know, they're in these games. They're playing well. There's nothing, you know. Sure, would you like to win every game? Yeah, but that doesn't happen. Nobody ever does that.
Yeah, fair to say they've had some games where they've come out not so good in the first period, and this was one of the cases where, you know, not that they gave up a ton of really good scoring chances, but they certainly were outshot.
Mm-hmm.
But the one, you know, a strength of this team all year, Steve, has been their penalty kill. They had a stretch where they took like three penalties within 5.5 minutes or so, and it is really, you know, they're – Here's the latest since coming into Thursday's game, and I don't know what they were on Thursday, but they had gone 31-for-34 in penalty kills in their previous 11 games. That's incredible, and that starts with goaltending.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it absolutely does. And let's not forget one other thing that the strength of this team too is. And tonight, Victor Hedman actually played 27 minutes, but for the most part, you know, McDonough, Hedman, Strawman, you know. Your big-time defenders are playing less minutes than the other team's defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Same with your offense. You're rolling four lines for the most part. You're playing all six defensemen at not quite an equal clip, and especially with penalty kills and power plays, it skews it some. But that your players are getting more rest than other players, too, as you're getting ready for the playoffs. Because this team mm-hmm. is so deep, and because of the lead they've built up, they don't have to win every game going down the stretch. They want to. They're trying to. Mm-hmm. But you can put Sergachev and Coburn out there more often right now than you would come playoff time. You know, come playoff time, Hedman and McDonough are going to be getting, you know, probably close to, you know, 27, 28, 30 minutes a game. You don't need to do that right now. And so the amount of rest that the players are getting, and it's not a really good word, but the less playing time that they're playing, you know, Victor Hedman's playing a lot less minutes than he did last year. And it's because of how deep they are in that, which is only going to help them come playoff time, is that they've got less wear and tear on their bodies. And it's all the way up and down the line.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. By the way, what did you think of the new alternative jerseys?
You know, from just a pure design and look, I mean, they're clean, they're nice. I know from a broadcast standpoint, it was pretty hard to see the numbers.
It's a nightmare. What do you mean pretty hard? I couldn't see them on TV. I don't know what you could see from the booth, for God's sake.
You know, I think, you know, we were talking up there, and if you know, if you're, say, a visiting announcer coming in and trying to call the game, whether television or radio or whatever, if you don't know the Lightning's players really well, it's really hard.
Oh, you're in trouble.
I mean, you know, if you know the Lightning pretty well, a lot of times you can tell by the way someone's holding the stick or, you know, shooting or taking the puck or whatever. You know, you can kind of know that right away. But if you don't know the team real well, that's got to be really tough. I believe they're wearing it every Saturday night from here on out at home.
Yeah. Wow. Well, look, the good, you know, it's all about marketing, right? I think Adidas made these things. They're selling them in case you want one. And they're going to be hot sells. I mean, they're good-looking jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if, like, right. To wear down the street or, you know, to wear as a fan, they're phenomenal. Sharp. And they're very simple. They're black, and then they've got they call it, I think, storm gray and something silver, the colors on it.
I'll tell you what, man. You know what they remind me of, you know? That's the black hole right there, man. That's the Raider version. I think they stole our colors, man. That is the black and silver right there. They remind me of, it's hard to read too. You remember the old Raiders? Sometimes they would wear their alternative white jerseys with silver numbers that you couldn't read.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of like that. Obviously, these are dark, but it's kind of like that combination where it's really difficult. But they're sharp. They're really sharp. Not so much for announcers.
Yeah, I think season ticket holders, if you renew your season tickets for next year now with a Chase card, you get a jersey complimentary or free or whatever they're calling it. So
no kidding.
They had that on the scoreboard tonight, that if you renew your season tickets, I don't know what timeline you have to do that, but if you do it with a Chase credit card, which is a big sponsor of the Lightning, you get one of the alternative jerseys.
It's a great deal, and people are going to go for them, and I'm sure my girls will be asking for them soon after we just got them the jerseys.
Valentine's Day's next week.
That's it. Just in time for that. So let's move on to baseball. John Romano, I want to encourage you to read a column he wrote in today's Tampa Bay Times about, and we hit on this a little bit, I think a night or two ago, Steve, about some of the proposals that baseball is making in terms of some changes that they are saying that they're considering. And you know, some people broke this on The Athletic, and it's been everywhere. But John does a good job of breaking it down. I encourage you again to read the column on TampaBay.com. I wasn't aware of this one. One of them is considering a proposal to lengthen the distance between the pitcher's rubber and home plate. And
I
the
think
motivation
that would be extremely hard.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hard to do.
Yeah, don't you? I mean, it would change the whole geometry of the game. The motivation is that pitchers are throwing harder than ever. We get, of course, strikeouts have overtaken. It's hard. You don't see the ball in play as much. Of course, I think, you know, the traditional distance has always been 60 feet, 6 inches, and it's been kind of sacred. I mean, I don't.
It has been, but players back then weren't throwing 98, 99 every batter.
Well,
every pitcher.
Right. They weren't. And so, I mean, if you change the distance, then you give hitters just a little bit more time to react, and it sort of negates some of the incredible hard-throwing pitchers that you see. And that's, in my lifetime, that's been the biggest change in baseball, is that there was a time when, you know, a guy like Nolan Ryan or J.R. Richard, there might be one or two guys that could ever even touch 100 miles an hour on a fastball, let alone consistently throw it up in the upper 90s. Nowadays, I don't think you see a guy after the seventh inning that doesn't throw 95-plus. I mean, it's just
occasionally you get that lefty that's facing one batter.
Sure, sure. Yeah, exactly, which is going to go away because one of the proposals is that every pitcher must face at least three batters. So for the lefty that was there to get one lefty a game,
I read an article that brought up a good point on that I didn't think of. But so if you're going to force batters or pitchers to face three batters, and let's say you're a lefty coming in and the order has a left, right, left, you're going to see a lot more intentional walks.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see that guy go, okay, I'll pitch to the lefty. I'm going to intentionally walk the righty and then pitch to the lefty. That's a consequence crazy. I didn't think about, but you might start seeing a lot more intentional walks, which I guess creates more base runners, could create more action and more scoring
okay
potentially. But it's a consequence you didn't think about, as far as, you know, if this lefty is really good against lefties but can't get a righty out.
Yeah, put them on. And most teams are going to stack their lineup as they do already with right, left, you know, try to break up the lineup that way and prevent you from being able to hone in on.
But it could also, too, so say, you know, the Rays have a lefty that, or let's say the team the Rays are facing have a lefty that they know doesn't hit righties very well. You might save some pinch hitters earlier in the game, some righty pinch hitters for later, because you want to take advantage of when that guy comes
in. Get him out.
We're pinch hitting these three guys on our bench that hit right-handed or vice versa. That it can really alter some of the strategy of the game. I hadn't thought about it when we first read it the other night when we were talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if all those changes are good or bad, but it can really affect the strategy.
Well, and the other thing, if you're saying it has to be consecutive hitters in an inning, you know, Joe Maddon and others, even Kevin Cash, have gone at times to, you know, say you have a left-hander in there, he gets the first out against the lefty, then they'll put him in left field for a hitter, bring in a guy to get a right-handed hitter out, and then he comes back in after that hitter and finishes
the Rays off. Did that with, what, Sergio Romo played third base, Jose Alvarado played first base for a batter this year?
And some guys have played left field, so yeah, I mean, if it's consecutive, you couldn't do that. So, I mean, I like the creativity that the Rays have done, and I think it affects smaller market teams. Because that's their competitive balance. You know, their edge is that they play the matchups because they don't have, you know, some of the talent, the same level playing field as the Yankees and the Red Sox, whatever. Yep. So it's gonna hurt them. Another one is
about the three batter minimum. One other thing I was thinking is, and I kind of like the idea, although there is some consequences to it. But I'd be okay with saying you don't have to face three batters if you get to the end of the inning. Like if they brought you in with two outs in the seventh inning and you got that guy out, because it's the end of an inning, you can go ahead and make the change. You don't have to face two more batters. Because you're trying to eliminate pitching changes, but in the middle of an inning, it doesn't, you know,
if you get the last out of an inning, then you whether it's one batter or two, you don't have to face three guys and come back out.
I think I'd be okay with that. Like, because if the goal is to reduce pitching changes and the stoppages of play and stuff, because at the end of the inning, it doesn't matter. You bring a new pitcher out to warm up or the current pitcher that was there, it doesn't matter either way. That might be one way I'd say, okay, you know, you don't have to face three if you get to an end of an inning. Just a tweak I might make in that, just to, you know, to where you don't completely eliminate the specialist, but if you bring him in to get one out and he can't get one out and he's got to face three batters.
You got to hang him out there. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I would think that would be okay. They're going to incentivize the draft. One of the ideas is to, you know, they're concerned about teams sort of tanking or in rebuilding mode all the time. And right now, of course, they reward teams with bad winning percentages, get the higher draft picks. They're talking about changing that. And I would think that would be horrible on teams like Tampa Bay and some of the low revenue teams like Minnesota or Pittsburgh. You know,
except those teams don't seem to be at the bottom every year.
Well, no, they don't. I mean, the funny thing is that you do get some parity in baseball.
You know, it's not the Padres would have been in the bottom forever out in the NL West.
Sure, sure. We talked about this too. The what we used to call the Texas tiebreaker in extra innings. It would be sort of the version of hockey shootout or college football overtime, where you know if you're in extra innings, you put a runner on second base, you know, that sort of thing. Kind of start the game, you know, from there. In the 10th inning, every inning starts with a runner on second. I don't like it. I don't think it's baseball.
I'm okay with it for the regular season. I don't want to see it in the playoffs.
I just think this, that how many extra inning games are we talking about that go beyond one or two innings? There can't be more than a hand. It's not like, you know, we had 25 games and went 18 innings last year. I mean, there's a time when some fans would be like, hey, man, I was at that game that went 16 innings. It was phenomenal, you know. I don't know that it's always a bad thing that you getting caught in that, but
the biggest thing is that game itself is phenomenal to go 16 innings. But then your bullpen and the next three games you're playing, you know, with one hand tied behind your back because you're limited on which pitchers are available and everything else.
Right. You know, they're talking about also lowering the mound. How would you feel about that? They haven't done that since 1968 after Bob Gibson had his 1.12 ERA, so it was lowered a number of inches. They're talking about maybe dropping it another 5 inches. I don't have as much a problem with that, to be honest with you, if they think that that's going to somehow, no pun intended,
level the playing field. Man, how many sinkers are going to hit 10 feet in front of home plate instead of 5 feet now?
I know, right? It's true. And then, of course, I still think that if they had a pitch clock and enforced it in Major League Baseball, I think that would be a good thing. You know, they do it in the minors quite a bit.
Yeah, but I want a batter's clock too, man. All these guys that have to, step out, and I have to undo every batting glove and redo it every, you know, at bat, even though I just stood there and did nothing in the box.
Yeah. You know, if you want to speed up the game, I think one way to do it is not allow the body armor. Because you know, these guys, like you said, they sit in there. Not only do they adjust all this crap that they got on their elbows and their shin pads and all this stuff, but they're able to crowd the plate, and they force pitchers to try to, you know, not throw strikes because they're hanging over the plate. There's no fear of getting hit because if they get hit, they're not going to feel it anyway. Believe me, if you took off the elbow.
Aren't we trying to do less injuries? I mean, isn't that kind of a going throughout sports now? Is we want stars playing. So do you want Mike Trout getting a broken hand or elbow
let me play through this, okay? So yeah, you don't want to see more guys get hurt. But guess what? All of a sudden, they're not on top of the plate, and if they choose to be, then they will get hurt. If they back off and let pitchers pitch on the inside half, which they've not been able to do, you're going to see a lot more strikes, you're going to see a lot fewer full counts.
Well, how about just enforcing the batter's box, which the umpires don't do? You crowd the plate because the umpire lets you.
You can still, your feet can be inside the batter's box and you can hang over with your elbows.
Okay, and then
push
the batter's
box
back.
Well, that's a potential. You could do that.
I mean, you know.
But if you can't cover the outside half, then it's.
I'd hate to see Bryce Harper or Mike Trout or whatever because a pitcher, you know, can't find the plate, gets hurt.
Yeah,
if he just wore an elbow pad, he would be, you know, he'd be okay. I mean, you know, that's what I want to. I agree with you. Some of the armor is excessive, probably, but
I know why they're wearing it. I mean, yeah. I do know why they're wearing it. And
by the way, the umpire, if you're leaning into a pitch, the umpire can say, no, that's doesn't count.
But you know
they
what?
Never they never do, but they can.
But it wasn't like, you know, when Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio or, you know, Henry Aaron or whoever Bob Gibson was facing, it wasn't as if those guys were knocked out for the season with pitches. I mean, you know what they did? No, they got the hell. They got out of the way.
Well, but they also weren't throwing as hard back then either.
Well, Bob Gibson threw as hard as anybody.
Bob Gibson did, but I'm saying as a whole, you didn't have every pitcher throwing 90.
Yeah, you didn't have everybody throwing 100 miles an hour. But the same token, I think this armor stuff is crazy to me. But anyway, that's one of. I mean, there's a number of rules there. There's a few I would go for, but for the most part, I don't want to change the game. I don't want to change the dimensions of the game.
Changing the distance to the mound. I mean, what are we going to raise the basketball rim to 11 feet?
Well, and that's been talked about.
I mean, that completely changes every pitcher.
Right.
I mean, you'd have some pitchers now that may be out of baseball because of that. I mean, that would be a drastic change. And I'm not saying it should never happen, but that's a drastic change if you're going to scoot the mound back.
John makes a good point in this lead. Unlike any other sport, really, baseball's records have kind of stayed, you know, fairly similar. And I think because the game hasn't changed dramatically, he talks about Babe Ruth setting the home run record in 1935. It stood until 74 when Aaron broke it, and then again in until 2007 when Bonds broke it. And yet you look at football, you know, rushing records seem to be set and reset almost every other year. You know, that's true also with, you know, wins. Like in the American League, he mentions that Ted Lyons led the AL in wins in 1925 with 21. Well, we just saw Blake Snell lead the American League last year with 21. So the numbers in baseball are hallowed. They're more sacred than any other sport that I can remember.
But some could make the argument that it hasn't changed with the times, which is part of its problem.
Well, you could make that argument, but for whatever reason, that sport holds its numbers and its records in more reference. I mean, look.
Oh, it does.
I mean, you know, we know that football is not, you know, if you're a wide receiver, those records are going to be shattered each and every year because no one's allowed to hit a guy over the middle. You're not allowed to touch the quarterback, the targeting rules. You know, suddenly Jerry Rice is going to get run down by receivers that could not hold his shoes. And that's just the natural evolution of the rules. So, but we don't seem as upset. For whatever reason, baseball has a much higher priority on keeping those records sacred. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but that's just the way it's been. There's not been a big variance despite rule changes, whether it's the GH or whatever has come along. That's, of course, the other thing they're talking about is a DH in both leagues, which I think is long overdue. So, but anyway, good column by John Romano. Make sure you guys pick it up and read it in the Tampa Bay Times. Of course, we had big news yesterday, Matt Bryant announcing that he's going to be released by the Atlanta Falcons. So one day later, that's right, the Bucs have their kicker.
They reversed the curse.
Not exactly.
Wow.
It's not Matt Bryant. They have signed Philip Andersen, who is a Danish kicker from the German Football League.
Isn't that a soccer?
Well, it sounds like it. Well-renowned German Football League. I guess it's American Football League in Germany. I don't know. This guy apparently wowed the Bucs enough to sign him to a contract at the Senior Bowl. He was in Mike Husted's kicking pro camp during that time in Mobile, Alabama. Michael Husted, of course, was a Bucs kicker for a number of years and a very good one. And so now, you know, he does pro camps for these guys. So I don't know anything. I wish I could tell you. I don't have any film from the German Football League. I assume he can kick it through the yellow posts. I don't know that he will go unopposed or even make it to training camp. But we talked about this a little bit. You know, people have seen that, you know, 1-1 = 2 every time. And, you know, obviously Matt Bryant and the curse of Matt Bryant is real, in my opinion. Bucks have had 11 kickers since him. No one as accurate as Matt has been during those 10 years. Of course, Keith Armstrong, who was special teams coach in Atlanta while Bryant was there the last 10 years, is now in Tampa Bay. All of it makes sense, right? Except for he's 43 years old. He's had some injuries, missed 3 games last year. You might have to carry an extra kicker, not knowing exactly what's going to happen with him. And, of course, those roster spots are precious. So it's not a slam dunk, as I keep telling everybody. And, you know, the fact that they signed this Philip Andersen may or may not mean anything for the regular season. But they do have concerns, and they will look to, you know, try to see if there are better alternatives that are younger, somebody's going to be here a little more long term, someone without a history of injuries. I mean, this is all part of the process now as your roster can expand to 90 players and not just, you know, the 53 and the 46 that you carry on Sunday. So Philip Andersen is the latest, and there's a lot of famous Andersons that have kicked in the NFL. Of course, I have no relation to Morton, I don't think, but you never really know. Finally, congratulations to USF. We talked about this the other night, Steve. They did it again. They went on the road at SMU. They were ahead in this game, then they were behind late. They went in on a 3-point shot with about 6 seconds left. Very impressive USF victory, and I think they're 10 games over 500 now. They're 16-6 for the first time since 1992.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and they've won 4 conference games in a row for the first time in 7 seasons.
I mean, just hats off to them and their staff, and the players obviously deserve a lot of credit. It's fun to see basketball relevant at USF again. And, of course, the women's team has been good for so many years. But to see the men doing it on the road, and it doesn't matter what level you're talking, you know, what conference you're in. But this was a really, really good win for them. And I got to see it and got to see the three-point shot. They had a lead. They gave it up. Had the next to last possession, of course, and then
they did it tonight without freshman Alexis Yent, who's their best rebounder. He was in straight clothes with a hamstring injury, so big win.
That's right. And some sad news, happy trails, unfortunately, for Frank Robinson, who died at the age, I think, of 83. Of course, Frank, known as a Baltimore Oil, also before that a Cincinnati Red. He was, I think this is true, Steve, he was an MVP in both leagues.
The only player to do so, I believe.
Yeah, and of course, maybe even just as impressive, the first African American manager.
Yes, he was
in the Major League Baseball. So, a lot of accomplishments for Frank Robinson, and from I did not have much interaction with him. Watched him play a little bit as a kid, but I'm told he was really one of the real gentlemen of the game, and people enjoyed covering his teams and following his career. And so, one of the real legends of baseball. Frank Robinson has died at age 83. So, anyway, that's going to wrap it up for us for this week. It was a very busy week. Of course, we've got Rays Fan Fest coming on over the weekend. We encourage you guys to go out and enjoy that with your family and also stop by and see us.
And remember, if you're going, you need a ticket if you're over 18, but they are free. You just go to RaysBaseball.com to get that.
Exactly right. We'll be there, I think, from noon to 2 o'clock.
That's correct. Yep. You got five or six different players and coaches lined up to interview.
Yeah, but stop by and say hello to myself and Steve, and my kids will be running around. It's a great event. It's a great day. Baseball is here. We're just really close to pitchers and catchers reporting.
Tuesday. Tuesday the 12th for the Rays.
Literally right around the corner. It's exciting if you're a Rays fan. And even if you're not, you should give this Fan Fest a try, because it's a heck of a lot of fun. And make sure you stop by and say hello to us as well. So, hope you guys enjoyed the week. Have a great weekend. We'll be back here on Monday to talk to you about everything that's going on between the Bucks, of course, the Lightning, the Rays, and anything else in the world of sports. For Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.